Hello and welcome to the Deep Dive with Dave podcast. This is Dave Lynn, your senior editor of thecorporatecouncil.net, and I'm very thrilled to be joined today by Stan Keller, who's a senior partner at Locke Lord. And I'm fortunate to have known Stan for many years and worked closely with him on ABA matters and a number of programs. And as everyone no doubt already knows, Stan is an extraordinary securities lawyer who's really the go-to person for all things securities law. So Stan, thanks so much for joining me today.
Happy to do it, Dave.
Our topic today is the SEC's proposed amendments to Rule 10b-5-1, and these amendments were proposed late last year, and the comment period closed last month, and I don't think it's an overstatement to say that the proposed amendments were pretty controversial, and I think, you know, one of the things that always strikes me is Rule 10b-5-1 is one of the most misunderstood of SEC rules. Over the years, I think people have confused it with a safe harbor when in fact it's an affirmative defense. And in many ways, it's a very narrow affirmative defense focused on a particular question of whether the person relying on the affirmative defense is in possession of material nonpublic information. So that really leads us to, you know, how to look at the SEC's proposed amendments in context. And Stan, I guess one question I have is, what really is the context in which Rule 10b-5-1 was adopted, and how is that important in understanding the amendments that the SEC is now proposing to the rule?
I think it is important to kind of step back, because what we're dealing with is an area of law, insider trading, if you will, violation of Rule 10b-5, that's really a judicially created body of law, created and defined by judges through their decisions, by enforcement actions, jury verdict, and the like. And if you go back to the 1990s, and in particular the proposal in 1999 by the SEC, there was a focus during the Arthur Levitt Commission on really the use of material non-public information, which of course is the basis for insider trading violations. And in particular, there was a focus on selective disclosure that was taking place at the time that the SEC at that time thought was inappropriate, may or may not have been illegal, but certainly gave some people an edge, and it wasn't consistent with, let's call, free and fair, orderly trading, with people being on as equal a basis as possible. And so as a result, the SEC proposed Regulation FD, which we all know and love well these days, Regulation Fair Disclosure, FD being shorthand for fair disclosure. At the same time, there was uncertainty as to what was the basis for insider trading liability. The misappropriation theory had just been blessed by the courts, but there was still uncertainty and indeed differences in court decisions on what was necessary for someone to have traded, and these are the key words, on the basis of material non-public information. So some courts said that the government had to show that you actually were using the information, that it is what prompted the trade. Other decisions and the position of the SEC was no, knowledge of the information, if you will, awareness of the material non-public information at the time that the person traded was sufficient. So at the same time that Regulation D was proposed and then in the following 2000 adopted, the SEC sought to clarify through rule the meaning of on the basis of, defining it to being aware of or knowing of the information at the time of the trade. At the same time, they also, for entities, adopted 10b-5-2, regarding walls and the ability to separate those who had information from those who had the knowledge, which is, if you will, part and parcel of what On the Basis was about. In connection with defining On the Basis of as having knowledge of the information at the time the trade was made, the SEC thought it was appropriate for clarity and to reflect, I think, indeed, what the law was, to identify specified affirmative defenses. And that's really what 10b-5-1 is all about. That if you adopt a plan or enter into a contract or have an arrangement at a time when you do not have material non-public information, the fact that when the plan is fulfilled, the contract is performed, the arrangement takes place, as long as you didn't influence it, it didn't matter if you subsequently came upon possessed material non-public information. So again, knowing possession. So one way to think about it is, look, if I can trade today without violating 10b-5 because I'm not in knowing possession of material non-public information, why can't I enter into an arrangement today for a future transaction? And that's really what 10b-5-1 is all about. And that's turned out to be very important and useful, and insiders and issuers typically use 10b-5-1 to engage in future trading transactions by entering into the plan at a time when it's a clear day, if you will. They do not have material non-public information. Because we, as you know, insiders, issuers, in a sense, always have at least non-public information. And so there's a judgment regarding materiality. And that's why we have window period, when the window closes, when it's likely that there's the possibility of material non-public information. But after an earnings release, for example, assuming full disclosure, it's more likely that the information will be out there and the insiders do not have the material non-public information. So that's some of the historical context here.
And if the SEC went ahead and adopted the amendments as proposed, how do you think that would impact the utilization of Rule 10b-5-1, where you have a lot of additional, very prescriptive conditions imposed on the use of Rule 10b-5-1.
I think that's the nub of the problem, Dave, that because of, I'll call it perceived and underscore, perceived abuses in the use of 10b-5-1, the SEC has sought to impose restrictions on its use. And let's focus on, I think, the one that is really the kind of most obvious and easy to get our hands around and understand, which is the cooling off period. You can adopt a 10b-5-1 plan today, but as proposed for offices and directors, we'll use the term insiders, they can't trade under the plan for purposes of having the affirmative defense for 120 days. And so that's a long period of time when lots of things can happen. I mean, just think about 120 days ago, we weren't quite as worried about inflation. We didn't have the stock market drop that we've had now, and things are very different. And so the key question is, how do these affirmative defenses fit into the overall construct of insider trading law? The SEC was very clear in its adoption in 2000, and it repeats it in the current proposal, that the law of insider trading is a matter of case law. And the only thing that Rule 10b-5-1 does is seek to define what does on the basis of mean. Knowing possession of material non-public information. And then you have added on to that affirmative defenses. Interestingly, and I had forgotten this until I went back to look, I was chair of the ABA Federal Regulation of Securities Committee at the time that, well, Regulation FD and 10b-5-1 were proposed in 1999. And we filed two comment letters, one commenting on Regulation FD, and not very favorably, although I've since come to regret that and believe that Regulation FD really did advance equal opportunity to information and worked. And we filed a separate letter dealing with 10b-5-1 and 10b-5-2. It was two letters, interestingly, both signed by me as chair, but the second letter dealing with 10b-5-1 was really done by a drafting committee of SEC and enforcement and litigation attorneys, as opposed to Weak Corp Fin types. Weak Corp Fin types, advisors, counselors to companies, transactional lawyers, comprise the drafting committee for the Regulation FD letter. In the 10b-5-1 letter, we pointed out this disconnect between the affirmative defenses, if you will, and how it fit in with overriding insider trading law, developed and created and defined by the courts, and suggested that the SEC characterize the affirmative defenses as a safe harbor, or alternatively adopt a broader additional affirmative defense, which basically covered any that was left out in the affirmative defenses. The SEC acknowledged that letter and said they thought what they were doing was appropriate to provide certainty, kind of indicating that they really didn't think it was a safe harbor. But that wasn't particularly problematic in 2000 because the way 10b-5-1 affirmative defense provisions now read, it pretty much is consistent with what one would say the law is. But now when you add these limitations and restrictions and take the 120-day cooling off period, suddenly it's no longer consistent with what one would say the law is. And to take an example, just assume today I'm an insider. I do not have material non-public information. It may be the day after the earnings release. It may be January 15th. The company's issued its year-end earnings release, provided its results, disclosed everything else that was material, and I feel totally comfortable that I'm free to trade today. But for reasons, and we'll say for good reason, I really think it would be better to defer my trade until next week. And so I basically enter into an arrangement for the trade to take place on a specified day next week. Does anyone think that I have, when that trade takes place, if something has arisen between the time I gave the order and the time it's consummated without my interfering in it at all, that I'm violating Rule 10b-5 as a result of insider trading? I would think not. Similarly, and let's just say I take a senior position at the SEC, become director of Corp Fin, and I decide, because I'm going to have a lot of information about what's going on, I want to give discretionary authority to my investment advisor without telling me, here's my portfolio, you decide what trading is appropriate, when to sell, when to buy, whatever. And I do that before I join the commission. And a week later, I join the commission. I suddenly am privy to all of the potential enforcement actions and actions being taken. And my investment advisor, without any knowledge of what I know, without any influence by me, goes ahead and trades my portfolio. Does anyone think I violated insider trading law? I don't think so. So now translate that to the SEC's proposal regarding 10b-5-1 affirmative defenses. What does it mean to have a 120-day cooling off period? I think my advice as a lawyer would be, okay, that's nice to have the certainty of the affirmative defense, but if that's not going to work for you, that's not the only way that in which you can engage in trading transactions without violating Rule 10b-5 as a result of insider trading. So I think what we're left with is this uncertainty of what's the relationship of these affirmative defenses to the law of insider trading, what's required to prove a violation of 10b-5. through the use of non-public material, non-public information. And frankly, as a result, I think while there will be circumstances where people will still use 10b5-1 plans, there'll be a lot of occasions when having a 120-day cooling-off period is really not going to work. And just step back and think. You're free to trade whenever you want in the absence of material non-public information. So I can adopt a 10b5-1 plan, 120-day cooling-off period, but if I'm comfortable that I don't have material non-public information along the way, I can trade directly without having to use the 10b5-1 plan. So I really think what has happened is looking at the, I'll call it perceived abuses, and we can debate whether or not those abuses are real, whether the studies that were cited are in fact reliable. Given that the proposed affirmative defenses now are no longer consistent with what one would describe as the law of insider trading, it was really kind of a failure to recognize this disconnect and come to grips with it.
And I think it would be an unfortunate outcome if the Rule 10b5-1 affirmative defense was less desirable from an insider's perspective because, and this is by no means an original point here, but I think as people have said, from a governance perspective and sort of from a perspective of allowing executives and other insiders to have sort of a planned out approach to their trading, the unavailability of it because of the conditions just make it, much more of a bit of a free-for-all environment, right? Like you said, you would just be relying more on the insider trading policies, restrictions around getting pre-clearance and the window and blackout period and the individual insider's assessment of whether they have material non-public information. So it could make an important tool, I think, much less attractive, and that would be an unfortunate result if that were the case. I guess the question is, are there things that could be done with these proposed amendments that would address some of the concerns that you just talked about, Seth?
Let me first say one. I agree with your observation, David. I think 10b5-1, as adopted in 2000, in a way was a trigger that kind of promoted, as you put it, corporate governance, really the response of companies to rationalize trading by their insiders and by themselves as issuers. We should say there's a 30-day issuer cooling off period that's part of the proposal, and that's controversial. I find it useful to focus on insiders because I think that's where it has the most impact. And so companies have adopted policies based upon the existence of 10b5-1, and frankly, it's operating efficiently, and it's making sense, and it's not being overly restrictive. And indeed, companies themselves, and this varies among companies, some companies have adopted their own cooling-off period just as a prophylactic measure that there be a clear period so if people aren't going to be second-guessed that if the plan was implemented the day after they put it into place, well, they must have known on day one what they knew on day two. And so many companies have imposed a 30-day cooling off period, again, as a prophylactic measure. Occasionally you see companies with 60-day cooling off periods. It's rare that you see a company with a 120-day cooling off period. And some companies have no cooling off period. Some companies require 10b5-1 trading plans to occur only during window periods because they don't want to be second-guessed, even if there's a valid defense to have the appearance of the misuse of material non-public information. And so I think one of the concerns is that taking an arbitrary time period, like 120 days, is really totally divorced from the adequacy of disclosure that occurs. So if you think about it, why should you be able to, even if there's concern about the potential for abuses, why shouldn't you be in a position to adopt a 10b5-1 plan in an open window period to be implemented, let's say, one day after the release of earnings for the quarter or for the year when there's full information out there about the company, which could be as short as think about a blackout period at the end of the year. So you, on November 30th, you adopt a 10b5-1 plan, and it gets implemented on January 16th, earnings having been released on January 15th and disseminated adequately. So under that calendar, you've got, what, essentially 45, 46 days having expired from adoption of the plan till it's being implemented. My own view is that it's unnecessary to have any cooling off period, that we should revert to the law of insider trading, which essentially the existing affirmative defenses do, and there should be better enforcement, more rigorous enforcement of abuses of it. I personally don't have a problem beefing it up by having someone, an insider, having to confirm that in connection with adopting the plan, they don't have the material non-public information. That tends to be required anyway by the broker-dealer firm who are going to implement the plan, so that they know they're operating and, you know, let the market operate with, let's call it, more focus and more enforcement. But if, you know, the commission decided that they have to do something, well, the ABA Fed Reg comment letter suggests that the cooling off period should be shortened to 60 days for insiders, or one day after the release of quarterly information, whichever is sooner, as at least a way that's less intrusive than just a blanket 120-day limitation, and also makes the case that for insiders, since insiders are responsible for having to release public information and in a position to avoid trading on the basis of material non-public information, that no cooling off period is necessary.
Well, it will be interesting to see how this plays out, and I know we'll all be anxiously awaiting to see the final rules, but I do appreciate you taking the time today, Stan, to give us some perspective on these proposals and some of the concerns.
And those are just some of the concerns, Dave. There are other issues embedded in the proposal, such as the inability in some circumstances to have more than one plan for single trades, being put in the penalty box if you terminate a plan, the presumption being that you terminate it for an improper reason to take advantage of material non-public information by not trading. The problem is that's treating perceived abuses with an overly broad brush, trying to kill a mosquito with a cannon, when more targeted steps really are necessary. To take an example, there are reasons, good reasons, that people terminate plans. So, for example, a responsible CEO might say, yeah, I know I've got a good 10b5-1 plan that can be implemented, but there's something material going on that wasn't going on at the time I adopted the plan, and I just don't want the adverse publicity of it coming out that I've benefited from a trade before this material information is in a position to be announced, and therefore I'm not going to put myself in that position. I'm not going to trade. I think people would applaud terminating plans for that reason. So I think a lot more refined thinking and more targeted provisions are really what we hopefully can ask the commission to be focusing on when they move towards adoption. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, certainly a lot of these topics have been addressed in the comment file and will no doubt be food for thought for the staff and the commission as they're moving forward with this. Great. Well, thanks again.
Happy to do it. It was good chatting with you.